From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. Indeed, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're glad to welcome in Michelle Valdez, who is the sales manager for Calvary Cemetery, part of the Catholic Cemetery and Funeral Services here in the Diocese of Sacramento, and George Mendoza, Parish and Community Outreach Coordinator. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Bob.
And thank you so much.
Thanks for the both of you coming in. You have the gold microphone in your hand. That's you know, we bring that out for the special guests, you know.
So, thank you.
So, George, tell us a little bit about your role.
Sure. So my role as a parish and community outreach coordinator is really to connect our ministry within the diocese to the parishes and the parishioners. We have a special ministry within our greater ministry to bring about a greater knowledge to our parishioners and to our parishes of what it means to die as a Catholic, but most especially what it means to have this resource as Catholics in the Diocese of Sacramento, which is really special for us because we not only have the cemeteries that most dioceses in the states have, but also we have the funeral centers to better serve Catholics really from the moment they pass and on to the eternal care of their burial plots, if you will, until, of course, the coming resurrection.
So is that a rare model to have both the cemeteries and the funeral services
in
a diocese?
It is, and we have a unique role here in the Diocese of Sacramento to offer what we would call end-of-life care from the start of the process to the end of the process. Mm-hmm. So what we like to say is we're a full-service provider in the Catholic funeral and cemetery services, and we really like to call ourselves a Catholic funeral experts because we specialize in bringing about a realization of the dignity of a human person as we care for someone who passes. So really taking that responsibility and that honor in such a special way, and it's near and dear to our heart, and it's near and dear to the heart of the bishop, so we like to carry that ministry throughout the diocese.
Yeah, I know it's very important to Bishop Soto. Tell us, are the actual funeral mass, though, is usually still at parishes, or do you have funeral masses at the cemeteries themselves?
Our preference would be for them to be at the parishes. Mm-hmm. Typically, what we see is we'll have the funeral vigil, the visitation, if you will,
right,
at the funeral center.
Our rosary.
Rosary or whatever cultural expression of prayer right, that our faithful like to have. Typically, that's the night before, but we also offer that the day of. And our preference and our family service advisor, as well as our funeral directors and arrangers, will always recommend having the mass at the parish, keeping that extension to the parish alive. And, of course, the life of a parishioner in the parish is very important, so we like to keep that connection going between right, the parishioner and the parish.
Yeah, our church is very much on the parish level. Michelle, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, first, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming.
I'm very blessed to be here. So I am the sales manager at Calvary Cemetery and Funeral Center. We've opened a brand new facility. If anybody's noticed, if they drove by on Interstate 80, right off of Greenback.
Yep,
so
yep.
I have the pleasure of working at that new facility and help bury the dead and help serve our community. We're Catholics serving Catholics. So it's just an honor to be able to help families with end-of-life planning and also at the time of need when they actually have lost a loved one.
And you also are in charge of Woodland and Calusa, Cemetery St. Joseph's in Woodland. And
Holy Cross in Calusa,
yeah,
that is correct. Yes.
Yeah. So do you have good tires on your car?
I do have good tires on my car. Yes, definitely.
Calusa is such a, well, and Woodland too. I'm very fond of Woodland. I'm a native of Yolo County, or near native. Calusa is such a beautiful little town and such a faithful community up there.
Yes, it's a very strong-knit community. Our cemeteries, we've done a lot of work over the last several years to beautify the surroundings there. So it's really impressive what we've done. And it's so important for us to serve our families and have the locations be a place where they can have peace and tranquility
right,
and that special place to grieve their loved ones.
Is the cemetery in Calusa right near the parish or not, right near the church or not?
It's not right near the church.
No, so it's a... a few blocks away. I think I'm being modest with that. But
Lady of Lourdes, is that right?
The parish is Our Lady of Lourdes, and Holy Cross is the name of the cemetery. Right. Yes.
Yeah. Well, so explain just for the listeners the different cemeteries you have, but they're all under the one umbrella. Is that correct?
They are. So in total, we have 11 cemeteries and four funeral centers, so 12 properties, if you will. And they're scattered throughout the diocese. We have, of course, our funeral centers are All Souls in Vallejo.
Right.
We have Calvary in Citrus Heights and St. Mary's in Sacramento. Right. And we, over the years, have acquired a few parish cemeteries, like Holy Cross used to be under Our Lady of Lourdes way back in the day. And we have St. Patrick in Grass Valley and St. Joseph in Woodland. And we also have actually St. Joseph next to the Pastoral Center. So those are a few of our cemeteries. And one of the things we like to explain to the faithful in our diocese as we join them for outreach presentations at their parishes is that the footprint of the ministry of Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services is large, and it's that way so that we can serve a greater population within the Diocese of Sacramento. So offering more services, and then special to us, and actually just we just received official certification for this, but we now offer for those Catholics who have a special calling to sustainability or who a special embrace to sustainability, we now have our natural funeral and burial options available, and those are at both Calvary and St. Mary, where we can prepare individuals in a more natural, sustainable way, and then have what we call natural burial options over at St. Vincent de Paul Cemetery in Rancho Murrieta, and then also at St. Patrick's Cemetery in Grass Valley, and those are under the patronage of St. Francis of Assisi, a saint who embraced that before it was the norm, if you will.
Yeah, exactly.
And so offering that option to a greater amount of options to the faithful throughout our diocese, some especially who are called to embrace sustainability a little more intently than others, perhaps.
What do you mean? Go ahead, Michelle.
I just wanted to add also that we also have Clump's Funeral Center as well on Riverside. So they're also part of that funeral center organization that we offer.
So what do we mean by sustainability?
Sure. So it's from the moment of preparation, it's using products that are more environmentally friendly. So they're what would be normally known as the greener way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then also our burial plots, instead of using the typical liners that traditional burial plots will use, the individual within a green casket, so either made of seagrass or bamboo and a couple other options, with no heavy manufacturing, if you will, they are placed into the plot directly, and the grounds are structured in such a way that they don't need to be as close to each other. And then also from the moment we bring someone into our care, the only really ungreen material that we use, I think we're calling it a hybrid option too, are the funeral coach and what we use, a small backhoe to dig the graves. Even from the stone that we place on top of the grave, they're out of the Central Valley, out of Madera, out of the Granite Company, and they're not those fancy, heavily manufactured stones that you typically see. So again, embracing a more greener option in response to what's happening really throughout the world is embracing that aspect of sustainability.
So are you getting a lot of demand for that?
We are, and it's coming out of, I believe, pockets throughout the diocese. We were at an outreach at St. James in Davis, for example.
I was going to say Davis. That's my hometown. That's probably the leader in that, would be my guess.
And they are. They're maybe three out of the five questions we received from parishioners at every outreach after masses that we had were regarding the natural options. And it's not just, we're not just calling them natural green options. Apart from the official certification by the Certified Green Council here in the States, it's their actual, I mean, again, the only really aspects we use that wouldn't be considered sustainable are the small backhoe to dig the grave and perhaps the coach that transports them. So really embracing that as a ministry in the diocese, as a company, and helping to offer Catholics a greater option to meet their own needs and how they express their beliefs as well.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Michelle?
I just wanted to add, I think that kind of goes hand in hand with what we do at CFCS. So we really tailor make all of our plans for the individual,
right,
especially in the pre-planning process. We do our best to make sure all of their wishes are met. So for me, it's super special to be able to offer that service to families. Again, we are there during their time of need, but also the opportunity for them to come in when they're not grieving a loved one and take that opportunity to plan their last right. wishes so that it's done under a circumstance where there's not that heavy emotional burden. Sometimes that can lead to overspending. So many things that families don't need to worry about at that moment. And just to kind of plug Calvary Cemetery and Funeral Center again, we're really blessed that Bishop offered us that opportunity to have that location, because now we're able to serve so many more families than we could before. Because not only do we have the new building, but inside the new building, we have a beautiful new chapel that's been consecrated. We have a beautiful reception room so families can gather after a committal and really celebrate their loved one. We have brand new state-of-the-art glass front niches. So I know you said you haven't been out there yet, but we'd love to give you a tour. Bob and any of your listeners, were there to serve our community. And again, we're just so grateful for that.
Describe the new facility. The new building.
So if any, if you've ever seen St. Mary's, it's very similar to like in design of that building. It's simply breathtaking. When you walk in there, there's a lightness about it. It's not dark, which is more traditional for
sure.
funeral homes and mortuaries. It's just amazing. You have to see it. And that we're encouraging every parishioner to come out and take a tour and just see it for themselves. So the chapel is very similar to St. Mary's. We do offer funeral service mass there, but we highly encourage our parishioners to go to their parishes first. But that is an option for them. And the glass niches are almost impossible to describe. It's something that I've never seen before. So it's just, it's beautiful. And we're just so blessed.
Wow. So, you know, you said St. Joseph's this and St. Joseph's. I've found in the years of doing this show that if I didn't know a name of a parish, if I just said St. Joseph, I'd probably be right.
Yes, very close.
I think there are 12. In fact, last year was the year of St. Joseph, and we had this pilgrimage to go to all. I think there are 12. There's one up in Wairika. They're everywhere. They're everywhere. Very, very popular. Very popular saint.
It's a good saint to have a patronage under.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, indeed. So George, tell us a little bit more about your job. You speak at churches. What do you do as a parish and community outreach coordinator?
Sure. So it's really our responsibility and our duty, if you will, to connect our ministry to the parishes, and we do so by having an intentional connection with the pastor and offering assistance to the parish in ways that our ministry is able to. One of those ways that we offer assistance or that we connect with the pastor is by educative means. Mm-hmm. We know that throughout our diocese and especially culturally within my own Hispanic community, we know the rhythms and the beats of what happens during a funeral and perhaps what happens during a Catholic funeral. We know we go and pray the rosary the night before we go to Mass and then to bury our loved one. But the fundamental aspect of the Catholic rites is often missing from our understanding. Right. So when we meet with pastors, we offer them this resource that we have. And when we meet with the parishioners, typically the way we do it is we'll meet with them after every Mass. We'll have what we call an outreach presentation where we show them a few slides and have a conversation with them. And it's a great way for them to ask difficult questions and hopefully get answers, and also set appointments up with our family service advisors who can more intently sit down with them and start the conversation of what it means to plan in advance and just answer those difficult questions that perhaps they may not want to ask. But our big focus is educating the parishioners in why it's so important to have a vigil, why it's extremely important to have a Mass, and then what it means, what a committal is and what that means for us. And often we like to say that our cemeteries, through their consecration, are an extension of our Catholic parishes. So there's that special relationship, if you will, between the parish and the cemetery,
right,
where that really extension of prayer continues forth in the cemeteries. I like to mention during my presentations this parish was consecrated to be a house of prayer, a house of worship, mm-hmm. where Christ becomes present to us through the sacrifice of the Mass and in unity with our brothers and sisters. And in our cemeteries, we're unique, of course, because we offer Mass every Saturday in our funeral center. So that's a very special thing for us. For those,
it's just a regular Mass.
It is just a regular Mass on Saturday mornings for dedicated to those who are in our cemeteries. But also, it's that opportunity for family members to come and pray mm-hmm. and remember their loved ones. Really, a space of unity, because just as in the Eucharist, Christ becomes present and our loved ones become present through Christ to us. In that very special way, our loved ones become present to us in the spiritual. And I believe it was the late Pope Benedict that mentioned when our loved ones pass, they don't become part of the invisible. They don't become part of the forgotten, but they are closer to us in that spiritual spiritual aspect. So it's such a special opportunity that we get to share this with our parishioners. And the reaction across the board is very often the same as, well, we didn't know this about what the Catholic Church teaches, especially within the Hispanic communities. And I know within the Filipino community, there's so much mourning associated with death, as is, I think, with any culture. But we really like to bring the light of the resurrection to what it means for us to die, really using death as a pilgrimage, how we respond as a ministry to this part of the pilgrimage, and then helping us care for our loved ones. So embracing both the spiritual act of mercy, consoling the sorrowful, and of course the very practical corporal work of mercy, burying the dead. Really embracing those.
When people see you after Mass, do they say, I'm busy, I need to go?
Oftentimes, yes. That's a common
reaction.
Next week,
we'll talk to you next week.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And then next week is always coming.
I think that's a pretty common theme for a lot of people. They're really afraid to discuss it. Some families that I've met with in the past, they're almost superstitious about it, and they feel like it's foreboding And so we really try to put people's minds at ease and let them know that dying is part of the natural process, but we're there to help them through that process. And one of the things that I think is very special about what we do is that when we actually pick up a loved one that passes away, we keep them in our care until the time that they're laid to rest. So I've worked at other funeral homes in the past, and they actually will take the person that's passed and store them in a facility elsewhere until they're able to bring them to their mortuary or funeral home. We don't do that. We strongly believe, and once we pick up that loved one, we keep them in our care until we lay them to rest. And, and for me, that means a lot. And I'm sure for a lot of people.
I'm sure it means a lot to the families,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, definitely. And at our new facility, we do have a care center there as well. So we're able, when we take that loved one into our care, they're with us there at that care facility. And we get a lot of phone calls from families saying, but where is my mom? Like, where is she
right now? Yeah.
And so we're able to let them know, and that gives them peace of mind.
Oh, very good. So what's Michelle, what's the toughest part of your job?
I think the toughest...
Other than being on the radio.
Definitely. the toughest part of my job is just really, I'm more of an empath, so I feel people's pain. But more than it being difficult, it's actually just such an honor to help the families during that difficult time. Mm-hmm. I've been through passings of loved ones myself, and I can really empathize with what they're feeling. And as all of my staff and everyone at CFCS, we all have our reason why we work for the organization that we work for. God has really brought us there for a reason. And it's really shown in our day-to-day activities, not only with our teammates, but with the families that we serve. And we strive to do that. That's something that we strive within our company, to make sure that people that we serve feel that love and compassion and empathy. It's super important to us. It's first and foremost.
So you talk a lot about, you know, pre-need planning. How common is that? And I think there are a lot of people, though, they're young, they're healthy, et cetera. And I think that when somebody dies suddenly, it must make your job a lot harder. It's suddenly, unexpectedly. I think we all think death's way off somewhere.
Most people do, but unfortunately, it's something that we can't escape. A lot of people will spend time to plan a wedding, their child's graduation, a baptism, And so the same thing needs to be done for the passing of either yourself or a loved one. So when we mention pre-need, we give families the opportunity to come in and tell us what their wishes are, what's traditional for their family. Mm-hmm. And then, like I mentioned earlier, we will tailor make a plan for them so that when the time of their passing comes, their loved ones will have that plan already prepared for them by the person that passed. And so it's just such a sigh of relief. It's a burden and it's a loving gift to leave that for somebody, to take the time to and plan what your end of life is going to look like so that your children, your husband, your wife does not have to do that during that difficult time.
Yeah. You know, George, you mentioned different cultures. The Diocese of Sacramento is so diverse. We don't need a diversity coordinator because we're already so diverse. It's amazing. Do funeral requests from families vary from culture to culture?
They do, and that's one of the things that I think we do well is honoring those cultural requirements at times, mm-hmm. but those cultural requests. And our team, like Michelle said, we're blessed to have a very diverse team within our own ministry. We have individuals who are part of the Filipino community who know how to cater more to those mm-hmm. services. Also, individuals who are Hispanic, as you may know, the Hispanic services, and I'm sure other cultures as well, tend to be very specific and also very prayerful. Mm-hmm. And our team knows how to manage those requests, where it's not just we don't have cookie cutter funerals, if you will. It's all personalized. We want to make sure, as Michelle said, that every family that comes in receives the services that they are requesting, mm-hmm. whether it's because of a personal reason or a cultural reason. We want every service we have is personalized. And one of the difficulties, if you will, when we're speaking at outreaches is people are always asking us, well, just give me a price. And and the reason we don't do that is not because we're hiding anything, but because we really want to strive for that personalization aspect. Right. And there, it's just, you know, do you want a one-day service, a two-day service, three, 4 days, things like that that come up, and really allowing the family to leave their mark. And especially when somebody is able to plan ahead, to pre-plan their funeral, as we call pre-planning, we like to give them the option to do that because it allows them over time, if their taste buds mature, if you will, they have the option to change or to adapt to their current situation. And we've seen this often where somebody comes in and they want the most elaborate funeral, and then years down the line, they just want a simple funeral. They have the option to do that. Mm-hmm. Whereas if it's what we call an immediate need, when somebody passes and they need to plan because they need it right away, they don't necessarily have the option to do that within the couple of days that they have to plan. Right. So it's an option that we like to call when people take this opportunity. It's leaving the gift of love and peace to their families. And we've seen it time and time again, both from the funeral aspect and then also in outreach. When you have the opportunity to sit with your family and talk things out and get opinions and really mature your opinion of what you want and get those different inputs, the funeral service really becomes fulfilled in that aspect, from the burial plot where you want to be laid to rest or from the funeral services you want to receive. Whereas if it's an immediate need, you typically only have days to choose, and there's the issue of financial options as well, which we're very proud to offer 0% financing options to our families that we serve, but also the ability to have payment plans in advance, mm-hmm. whereas an immediate need, everything has to be given before the services are carried out. So again, it's those options of personalization, and our family service advisors, if there's a Filipino family we're serving and our family service advisor doesn't necessarily know what to do, right next to their cubicle, there's somebody from that community mm-hmm. that can help and plan. And it's just, it's a blessing to be able to even say that, where, you know, again, no cookie cutter funerals. Everything is personalized to the family's desire.
Yeah. Michelle, you're in sales.
I am.
And we're talking about cost a little bit. So often when you see some tragedy and you're reading about it in the paper or hearing about it on TV, and you'll see a GoFundMe page is started. Right. to help the family with funeral services. Mm-hmm. What are we talking about in a general range, and what options are available to people?
So if you plan ahead of time, you have the option, as Jorge mentioned, of doing financing with no interest. So it's really quite affordable for the families. We work with the families based on, as I mentioned earlier, what's traditional or what they see for themselves. And then they make a monthly payment. And then within 48 months or less, it's paid off and it's all taken care of for their families. In the event of what you mentioned, where you have an at-need situation, right, and a family does not have the money to pay for it, we have various financial options for families that are in that type of financial need. So we don't turn our back on anyone. We right. accept everyone, and we try to do our best to help them any which way we can. So there's an opportunity for any situation with us. We don't want a family to have to be on the corner washing cars or, mm-hmm. you know, food runs like a tamale right. sale or something like that. We're there to help them. We're Catholic serving Catholics. So we will make sure that we lay their loved one to rest in a dignified fashion.
So if people want to see the new facility, what's the best way for them to make an appointment or?
They can definitely make an appointment. Give us a call. We're at 7100 Verner Avenue, right off of Greenback. Right. Do you have the I can leave you my phone number. We right. can give it to you. But they just simply have to give us a call, and we'll give them a tour. And I think they would really like to see the new facility.
Very good.
We also have the option, if they like to go on our website, they can go under our events page or mm-hmm. on the front page of our website, and they are welcome to request a tour. They fill out a couple of contact information, and then one of our family service advisors will then contact them to schedule a tour. And like Michelle said, it's a state-of-the-art. It's a beautiful facility that brings with it the Profumo Hall, which families have the option to mm-hmm. have gatherings instead of, you know, really from – they don't have to leave the cemetery at all in some right. instances. Our Resurrection Chapel is just – adorned with the images of saints, and one of the most beautiful parts of that is our stained glass niches, our mm-hmm. Glass niches, which are illuminated by the soft tone of beautiful stained glass windows. And if they like to also call our funeral center, the number would be 916-726-1232, 726-1232, and they have the option of scheduling an appointment too. Or oftentimes we have people coming in as walk-ins. We would prefer an appointment just so we make sure that they are welcomed as the guests that they are in our facility. But it's a beautiful opportunity to perhaps see the beauty of the ministry that we have to offer to them.
Walk-in funeral parlor sounds.
Are you ready to make your appointment, Bob?
Yes. I don't want to be a walk-in. Again, that's 916-726-1232. George or Jorge, which would you prefer?
Either or.
Either or. Okay. And Michelle, thanks so much for all you do. You're doing the Lord's work for sure.
Thank you so much for having us. We greatly appreciate it.
Come back anytime. We'd welcome you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you
turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
This is James McCormick, President and CEO of the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Jim, for that wonderful introduction. We are just pleased to welcome in Deacon Greg McAvoy Jensen, who is staffs the Office of Worship and is also Associate Director of Deacon Formation. Were you Director of Deacon Formation before you were a deacon?
No. That, the order came opposite that.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. And you know, we're going to do a series here on the Mass. I have to relate. It was probably 30, maybe even 40 years ago. My brothers and sisters, we were all scattered, you know, and grandkids, and not my grandkids, but other grandkids, and my dad was in his later years, and we had all decided we were going to gather at this little lake up in Idaho, Priest Lake of all names, and we thought it would be really nice to go to Mass together. And so we were all going to be there on a Wednesday, and there was a little town, like maybe 1,500 people, named Priest River, right near Priest Lake. And I went and knocked on the rectory door, and a priest answered, and I said, you know, we're all from California and various other places, but we're all here together kind of for the last time maybe. We'd really like to come to Mass on Wednesday morning. What time is daily Mass? And he looks at me and he says, what time would you like it to be? And so there we are Well, and I'm sure he thought, wow, this must be, these must be really faithful Catholics here. Some were more faithful than others, and as we've seen in large families. And at one point in the Mass, you know, we're so used to when people stand, we stand. When people kneel, we kneel. We, you know, when people start the Lord's Prayer, oh, yeah, I know that one. And at one point in the Mass, he looked at all of us and said, are you going to stand? Like, and we were so embarrassed. Yeah. Like some of us should have, and we realized for so many years, we were just doing follow the leader instead of knowing it and knowing why. So I'm really think this is great, because I think there are a lot of Catholics that may be in that boat, or yep, newcomers maybe to Mass.
You know? Yeah, yeah. Learning the rubrics is beautiful. There's also, I think, something, I think your story is also a testimony of the beauty of our corporate together worship,
right,
that this is
right,
something that we need each other,
yep,
to do. And when we're all together, it flows. We act together as one organism.
Yeah, you
and
know,
it's beautiful.
It's interesting because nobody suggested we should all go out to dinner. Mm. Nobody suggested we should. Everybody suggested we should all go to Mass together, which was very moving to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah, it's beautiful.
What do we mean by a rubric?
Well, rubrics are the rules, the pattern, mm-hmm, the guidance that the Church gives us for how we carry out a liturgy, how we pray a liturgy, including the Mass, but also others. In the liturgical books, there are a few different kinds. Some are the like if you're looking at your own missal or the right, worship, whatever worship aid they might have in the parish that talks you through the steps of
right,
the Mass. So those are rubrical instructions there. And in the Roman Missal itself, the big heavy prayer book that the server holds for the priest, the rubrics there include the general instruction of the Roman Missal, the
uh-huh,
the introduction, which also gives guidance. It talks actually a couple different times, goes through the Mass in parts to talk about what are the meanings and what are the options and things like that. And then it goes through it again to talk about what are the different roles that the different people do. And so it's a great thing to study. Rubrics are about the details, but they're also about our practice. So mm-hmm, it is a beautiful mm-hmm thing to study. Looking at the Mass, we could, or with someone else, you could also go through the Mass about what does everything mean.
Mm-hmm.
And this approach of what do the rubrics say? What are the actual practices? Is more about what do we do? So, but both are important to know. But we'll focus, I think, in this part more on what is it that we do? What does the Church ask us to do for the different parts of the Mass?
So, don't know if you know the answer to this, but I'll ask it. How far back in time can you go and go to Mass, and you would recognize it as a Catholic Mass? All the way to the Last Supper?
Well, I mean, yeah, you hear the Last Supper story in the Bible, so
yeah,
that sounds familiar. If you were to read the Emmaus story,
uh-huh,
right, walking on the road and hearing
right,
the Lord, unravel for them what the Scriptures meant as they led up to
right,
his Paschal mystery, and then with them he broke the bread.
Right.
So yeah, there are prototypes that go all the way back. Another way to ask that question would be if we were to go to some of the Eastern Catholic
uh-huh,
or even Eastern
sure,
Orthodox churches and see those Eastern rites, some of which have had very little change since for centuries
right,
there, you know, would we recognize that? And there are a lot of sort of cultural trappings and, you know, do you have bells on your
uh-huh,
thurible for incense
right,
or do you
right,
not have bells and things that catch your attention when,
mm-hmm,
when you're there. But if you distill things down, I think you can recognize things going way back.
We've always had music in Mass.
Or chant, yeah,
uh-huh,
I think so, because the Psalms for the Jews, now I'm not a church historian, that's not my expertise, so some others might know better than me on this, but Psalms are meant to be chanted.
Right,
and
right,
so at least from that we would have
right,
had chant
wow,
way back, yeah, yeah. So
well, I'll let you lead about breaking into the mass.
Sounds good. Well, we're doing this. There are a couple of reasons I wanted to bring up this topic at this time. We're in the Eucharistic revival.
Right.
We had the preparation year. We're in the diocesan year. We'll have the parish year. Then we'll have the national stuff after that. So the parish year starting in June.
It's a wonderful initiative. I really do.
Yeah. The U.S. Bishop started that, and Diocese of Sacramento is participating. So.
Right.
That's a wonderful opportunity to focus on the Eucharist, which, of course, the Mass is that is the focus of,
sure.
Of the Eucharist.
The
Eucharist
source and
is,
summit.
Yes. And well, let's talk about that when we as we go to those points. As we come into the beginning of the Mass, we'll go sequentially through it. But we can see the Mass as that to which everything in our Christian life has been leading up to for that day or week or whatever. That's what everything is driving at. Even if we've had the celebration of other liturgies, other sacraments, even they are leading up to this moment of the Mass, of celebrating and becoming and joining together in the Paschal mystery of Jesus Christ and hearing His word.
Let me ask you one more definition, because people hear this all the time, and sometimes I think it's such a common word they'd be afraid to ask. Define liturgy.
Liturgy, literally translated, means something like the work of the people. It comes mm-hmm. from a Greek word. And it is, so what does a baker do? A baker bakes. A teacher teaches. A Christian prays.
Mm-hmm.
And, so that's the way Monsignor Kidder used to describe it to me. So it's the hallmark that identifies mm-hmm. what a Christian is. So that, but you're asking me right after Holy Week and Easter Sunday.
Yes.
So in this time of the liturgical year, I think the emphasis is on the word work. You know,
work.
It's the work of the people, because
mm-hmm.
Christians maybe also generally, but the ministers in particular are exhausted right now and recovering from the work of the liturgy.
And we're still
the liturgy,
in the Easter season.
We're still really almost in Easter Sunday for this octave. If you were mm-hmm. to be praying the Liturgy of the Hours, for example, the way it's described in the Roman Missal is it's essentially Easter Sunday basically is continuing for these first 8 days.
Right. Okay.
And then the celebration of Easter itself, yes, continues all the way through Pentecost.
Yep.
A great celebration. So
the birthday of the church.
There you go, on Pentecost, right. So we have these rubrics, and I mentioned before the general instruction of the Roman Missal. Mm-hmm. That's actually, you know, you think of that book that the priest has is something that is, you know, a rare thing to stumble upon. But the general instruction itself is available to everybody mm-hmm. on the web. So if folks want to find that, they could just go to the U.S. Bishop's website, usccb.org, and then they can click on prayer and worship. And then click on the Mass, and they'll be able to read through.
You know, that's a great resource for people to know about. A lot of people know about scd.org, which is Sacramento Catholic Diocese, which is also a great resource. But so many times I go to usccb.org to there's so many different functions and committees and the Committee on Social Justice and mm-hmm. on the death penalty and on all these things. And you can find official statements. You can find even which bishops are in charge of what. It's what initiatives there are, and especially with the Eucharistic revival, it's a great resource.
Yeah. And the days readings are always there.
The readings are always very helpful.
The priests of the diocese had a training, the priest and the deacons, mm-hmm. back in September on the general instruction of the Roman Missal. Mm-hmm. We flew an expert out, Father Paul Turner, to speak with the group. And so part of what inspired this conversation was some of the things that he mm-hmm. shared. And he had an approach to the rules, the rubrics, that, you know, he wants to make sure that he does what it says to do, and that he doesn't do what it doesn't say to do. And that includes, you know, bringing in stuff that's been removed in the current edition, you know, that might have been there in prior editions.
Well, you know, and people sometimes get kind of agitated, like, oh, why don't we just have a little more freedom of this or that? And pretty soon you don't have a faith that we can, I mean, as my dad told me when I was a little kid, and he proved it to us when we'd go on vacation and we'd go to different places for Mass. He says, Mass is the same everywhere we go. It wasn't just in Davis that was the way Mass was, and then we go to somewhere in Boise or somewhere, and it's a completely different deal because there's a reason for these things.
Yeah, yeah. And there's space in the church for, well, there's space in the rubrics for flexibility in specific places, and everybody gets that. So,
right.
But there's also space in our spiritual lives for things that are much more particular to us that touch our heart more, and that's the huge variety of devotional prayer that we have. So we've got a tremendous amount of flexibility and variety in our church through that. But there's something about the rights that people have that liturgy helps to guarantee. Pope Francis, in his recent encyclical, I can't remember if it's an encyclical or letter on the liturgical formation of the people of God, Desiderio Desideravi. And he wanted all the rubrics to be followed. He says, let us be clear, every aspect of the celebration must be carefully tended to, and every rubric must be observed. Such attention would be enough to prevent robbing the assembly what is owed it. Owed to it, namely the Paschal mystery celebrated according to the rubrics. So there's something about our rights that are protected when we do that. Because if we were to say, well, Bob gets to choose how we're creative with the liturgy, it'll be great as far as you're concerned, but the next person may seem, oh, he's off the deep end on this direction or that direction. And if we give the other person that freedom, then you may have the same experience. But this is our common liturgy.
And it leads to division.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though everybody liked Bob, you know.
Right, exactly. Yep. So one way to look at this Mass that has, again, that's the summit of all that we've been doing that week up until the time that we come to Mass is to see how is the church prepared for that liturgy as we come in. So the altar, for example, there's a special preparation that's done for the altar. We make sure that there's a cloth on it, right, like a tablecloth. But in this case, and sometimes there are cloths that might be the color of the season. That doesn't, you don't have to do that, but some parishes do that. But the top cloth is always white. The altar is to be covered with at least one white cloth, the rubrics say. And what I like about that is the connection. I can think of some other things that get covered with a white cloth, right? I'm thinking here about baptism and the baby.
Right.
I'm thinking about the liturgical ministers, their first garment is the white alb. Altar servers, bishops, anyone, the alb is what they've got on. And then at our funeral, right, there's a white cloth put on. I just like that what the church dresses us in is the same thing that the central symbol of Christ in the church, the altar, is dressed in also. I love that connection, that we wear the same uniform, essentially, as Jesus Christ at Mass. That's a little bewildering and humbling, but it's beautiful. The altar should be thought of, I think, too, as the central feature in the church. Like one of the reasons that you would build a church is because the Lord's got a table that he wants to gather people around. That's what the building's for. There might be other things in it, but they're not as essential as that altar. And when we talk about Eucharist, that's where Eucharist takes place. That's where we join that memorial that brings about that precious connection and unity with Jesus to and unity with Jesus Christ. There's also a cross. The rubrics talk about having a cross, and there may be one architecturally installed in the church. There may be a processional cross. There usually is a processional cross.
Usually,
but once we get into the Mass, the rubrics are clear that there's one cross to be near the altar. In other words, you have the altar, which symbolizes Christ. The cross also symbolizes Christ's crucifixion and gift of love of himself, love of us through the gift of himself, and the two need to be associated with some kind of proximity. It's not more specific than that. It can be on the altar. Sometimes you've seen that. But in a church of any size, it needs to be big enough to
Should be
a seen.
Crucifix?
And here we're specifically talking about a crucifix. Mm-hmm. That's right, with the crucified, the form of Christ on it. So if there is a fixed altar or fixed cross there in the room after the procession comes in, then the processional
cross, the processional crucifix, would go away. It would be stored in a dignified place.
Right.
But out, you know, the idea is that there would be one altar, one cross. That's right. To show the connection between the two. And then candles. Candles, as we get them, you can have, do you know how many candles you can have for the altar? So you can have two or four or six. If a bishop is celebrating, then the number should be seven. Special.
I was going to say even numbers, but there went that.
They're right. Yeah, yeah. So you can look that up in the Book of Revelation for seven lampstands.
Oh, wow.
And the candles for the altar can all be carried in procession. So if you've got more altar servers than you know what to do with, then stick candles in their hands and off they go down the aisle. You can have a real team there. And the cross is always between the candles. So sometimes they don't fit in the aisle, but maybe one in front, one in back, so that the cross remains surrounded and honored by the candles. And of course, those candles are wax candles rather than oil candles. The sanctuary lamp can be an oil lamp. In fact, the holy oils can even be burnt in it after, you know, when they're no longer needed for the prior year. You know all this stuff. You're an expert. So the other thing that we do in preparation for Mass is the silence in the church, which is not required. It's simply listed as praiseworthy. So it's not something that has to be, you know, strictly enforced, but it is something that it has an importance. As what we're coming to do here, I remember being with a gathering of Franciscans for a social concerns convocation, and these guys had been apart for, you know, maybe the whole of the last 6 months or a year, and so it was a family reunion in part, but also you could tell from some of their faces as they approached the liturgy, they carry out their apostolate with such intensity that it was all they could do, it looked like, to just kind of get themselves into the chapel, sit down here in the 5-10 minutes before Mass, and collapse in prayer. And then others were having, you know, just quiet, warm connection there as well. But I think since what we are doing is coming back from the living of the Christian life and the lay apostolate or whatever apostolate we're doing in the world, to recharge and reconnect, and that's what the introductory rites are for. They're a time for coming back together in communion. They join us in song. You know, there aren't a lot of people probably in your life who you sing with usually among your friends, right? But the whole church in all its diversity of economic status, of education, of ethnicity, of backgrounds of various sorts, coming together to sing in praise of God. That's a great uniting factor there. So, yeah.
Deacon, we have about 4 minutes.
So All right, sounds good.
And for those who are enthralled, as I'm sure many of you are, Deacon is going to come back on has graciously agreed to come back on a regular basis, and we're going to cover the entirety of the Mass.
Sounds good, yeah. Well, there's some postures that might be worth pointing out that kind of are relevant throughout. There's the genuflection and bowing that we do. Those are often new to folks who aren't Catholic as they join us for the first time.
It's in the culture, though. People, when you say genuflect, they know you mean Catholic.
Right. Part of our identity. So that's bending the right knee down to the floor. And that's so the rubrics kind of by default are having us bow before the altar. But it says if the tabernacle is there in the sanctuary, then we genuflect. But just at the beginning of Mass and at the end. The ministers don't genuflect apart from that, except for there are three specific times when a priest does as part of, you know, the Eucharistic prayer and receiving communion.
Is that a sign of humility, respect? What is the genuflect?
That is, you know, a sign of reverence, I would say, to the presence of Christ.
Right.
We use it a few other times, right? It's at the... Creed, When we have on Christmas, right? It's used, I believe, at the Incarnation. It's the right. Incarnation's mentioned at Christmas.
Right.
And then we, I guess we just kneel during the Passion. It's not necessarily a genuflection. And then Holy Friday, on Good Friday, we're before the cross. That is another time the genuflection is used. But usually it's when the Eucharist is present.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. So, and then bowing, some folks, you may see this. This is something that takes getting used to, that at least the ministers would make a bow of the head whenever the name of Jesus
right.
or the Blessed Virgin Mary
I learned
are mentioned.
That very young in life.
Okay, yeah, okay, that, good, yep. Or
Blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Yes.
Yep.
Or when the three divine persons are mentioned together, or if it's, say, you know, St. Joseph's feast, and his name is mentioned, then the bow for him on that particular day as well.
So, March 19.
There you go, right? Yeah. Yep, not so long ago. Well, we're right between the two, right?
We are.
St. Joseph the Worker coming up in about three more weeks.
That's right.
So, yeah. Very good. And I guess one other sort of preliminary thing before we, and maybe next time we can get into the introductory rites, would be the importance of the chair.
Right.
The bishop, of course, has a special chair, and that has to do with his particular governance. But there's a parallel, I guess, for in the parish church, there's a chair, and that's the presidential chair, where the priest, you know, it's a position, even if he's not sitting in it, but even standing by it, that's his position that shows his governance and leadership of the Eucharistic assembly there in prayer. So it's a being there is relevant to the prayer, because it talks about it, you know, it speaks to his
right.
particular role, his relationship to the community there. So it's not just sort of a random place. It's not just a fancy chair to make him look good or show him honor. It's beyond that. It honors the role, and of course the role that he's playing in the Mass would be in persona Christi.
In persona Christi.
So that's to honor Christ who is working through the priest.
This is so instructive to me, and I know to our listeners, is there's a reason for all of this, and there's a beauty to having a reason. Say it wasn't like a group of people just got together and made stuff up and said, well, we need to have a gathering and we need to do some stuff. You know, it's like this, everything has a meaning that goes right back to the time of Christ.
Yeah, that's true. And that's, I think, what the Pope was largely getting at in his letter, Desiderio Desideravi, on formation for the liturgy, that we need to be comfortable, we need to be fluent in this symbolic language that we use in liturgy, because there's a lot of it, and it's powerful, and it's easy if you are used to it to give yourself over to it in prayer. And it's quite helpful for the formation of Christians as well as for our prayer in the moment.
Well, Deacon Greg, time flies when you're having a good time. We look forward to you coming back, and thanks for all you do. And this has been very instructive, and I can't wait for the next session.
Sounds great. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks so much. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless. We'll talk with you again soon. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town, and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento, who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Held high, such small sacrifice.